is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Locked On Clippers. I'm your host, Lucas Ann. Today is Thursday, February 23rd, and today is the NBA trade deadline. We're here with our fourth episode of the week. It is our second to last. We'll be back on Friday with our final episode of the week, and we're here every Monday through Friday with new episodes every morning. The Clippers are finally breaking into their first post-All-Star stretch of the season. Their first post-All-Star game starts with the back-to-back against Golden State and San Antonio, because, of course, it starts with the back-to-back against Golden State and San Antonio. Couldn't give the Clippers a break here. But this is big. All these games are big. Now, the big news, obviously, that Chris Paul is healthy and could be playing tonight against the Warriors. I'm not sure if it's the best idea for him to play in this game. Obviously, I'm not the most optimistic when it comes to the Clippers matchups with the Warriors, but I think they lose the game either way. I think that they have, in the Spurs game, Chris has a better chance of really boosting the team to a win. I think in the Warriors game, the Clippers are going to lose either way. And you really want to bring a guy who's been out for over a month back immediately into a back-to-back. Let him sit the first game. Let him play the second game, totally rested. And then hopefully he can play through then. The biggest game is that March 1st game against the Houston Rockets. If the Clippers lose that game, the task of climbing up to the 3 seed becomes almost impossible. If they win that game, they're just within striking distance, because the Rockets have 2 games left against the Golden State Warriors in March. The Clippers play the Rockets one final time in April. That game will not only be another chance to give the Rockets a loss, but it will also decide the tiebreaker if the Clippers are able to win the March 1st game. So really, it's all that March 1st game. Every game matters, of course, because the Clippers don't have a huge margin for error. They have to basically play the Rockets even outside of the Golden State games and the head-to-heads. But that first head-to-head matchup will really determine if the Clippers lose that game on March 1st. I think it's going to be hard to figure a way for them to make it to the 3 seed. And at that point, you really have to start thinking about how you're going to strategically kind of wiggle your way down to the 6th spot. But since this is potentially the Clippers' last matchup against the Golden State Warriors this season, if they don't end up meeting in the playoffs, and it could be their last, this Clippers era, last chance going against these Warriors, because Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are, of course, free agents, and it's been kind of a storied history. Going back to the first playoff series, the Clippers beat them in 7 during the whole Donald Sterling fiasco. There's a massive rivalry. Then the Warriors end up hiring Steve Kerr to replace Mark Jackson, and they become a very good basketball team instead of just an okay one. Well, I guess a good one. They were, they were a good playoff team, but then they became like a great, amazing team when they hired Steve Kerr. And it hasn't been competitive since then, because the Warriors are so much better and they're so fired up every time they get a chance to play the Clippers. So I did a little bit of a Q&A with Nate Parham of Golden State of Mind, and I just want to go over a little bit of the questions that he asked me, and just kind of talk about this matchup. So the first thing that he asked me is, you know, do the Clippers, like, is it still a rivalry? Are things going to be heated again, especially if they play in the playoffs? And I said it's a weird feeling when these teams play each other, because not a lot has changed over the years. You know, Steve Kerr is in, Kevin Durant is in, obviously. Guys have swapped around, but you've got Draymond Green has been an instigator since day one. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, still going against Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and they don't like each other. But it's almost like it's hard to call it a rivalry because it's not competitive. And the players on both sides know that it's not competitive, but they still hate each other. So it's a really weird feeling. But yeah, I think the rivalry is kind of over unless the Clippers can do something. And I don't think winning this regular season game makes it a rivalry again, unless there's some sort of crazy fight and the Clippers win. The Clippers basically have to win and piss off the Warriors with like some sort of fight, or there has to be dirty plays on either side. You know, something controversial and a Clippers win might spark up the rivalry again. But really, I think it would take a heated playoff series. You know, if the Clippers beat the Warriors in the playoffs, or even if the teams play each other and there's, you know, flagrant fouls and fights and it goes to 6 or 7, you could start saying the rivalry is there. But if the Warriors sweep the season series and then the teams don't play in the playoffs, how can you say it's a rivalry? If the Warriors sweep the season series and then beat the Clippers in 4 or 5 games in a kind of low-key playoff matchup where they just thoroughly outplay their Southern California enemies, how can you say that's a rival? I certainly don't think it is. And so I think that's, yeah, man, it's hard for me to sit here and call the Clippers Warriors thing a rivalry, because it's just not. So as far as I'm concerned, get up to the 3 seed, avoid the Warriors. You know, I think the Rockets are in the best position of anyone to take out the Warriors. So let's get the Rockets down to the 4 seed. So they have to play the Warriors in the second round. And now the Warriors are going to have a tougher 1-8 matchup. I still don't think the Pelicans are going to give them problems with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. Or I guess real problems, you know, serious problems. But it's going to make it tougher. They're going to get beat up a little more. They might lose a game or an extra game. If it was going to go 5, now it might go 6. It's probably going to be a sweep. Now it might go 5. And it's definitely going to be, you know, there's going to be more physicality with DeMarcus Cousins. There's going to be more emotion. It's going to wear on them more than an easy sweep against Denver or whoever was going to make it. But yeah, someone else has, you know, the Rockets have to pull the upset, and then, you know, you can do whatever you want, Clippers versus Rockets, Western Conference Finals, but as far as I'm concerned, avoid the Warriors, get to the 3 seed. Don't worry about it too much. And I think the Clippers' best chance going forward is really just to wait in the wings. Hope that something, you know, keep the core together, stay being really good, and there's going to be a year when the Warriors have an injury and there's a window, or someone else upsets the Warriors and there's a window. And if you keep this core together for 5 more years, you're really good for 5 more years, and then guys are old and, you know, the team is kind of over, but you're really good for 5 more years, you'll probably get at least 1 or 2 chances. 1 or 2 stumbles. I think last year was a year like that. You know, Steph Curry being injured potentially could have missed the first 3 or 4 games of the second round if the Clippers had stayed healthy and finished off the Portland Trailblazers. Now, keep in mind, Kevin Durant still wasn't on the team at the time, so they were down one of the best players. You know, they already didn't have one of the best players in basketball that they have now, and they were down their best player. So you put the Clippers in that series. If Steph Curry is going to miss the first 4 games, the Clippers could realistically go up 3-1. Split at Golden State, win 3 and 4 in Los Angeles, and then you just got to win 1 of the last 3. Now, maybe you still lose them all, and maybe you don't even go up 3-1 with Steph out, but that was an opportunity. And it was like within 24 hours, we went from this window opening, and all of a sudden the Clippers were like the favorites to come out of the Western Conference statistically, not like reporters talking about it, although they were, but the statistical models projected the Clippers as the favorites to come out of the West. Then 24 hours later, Chris Paul's out for the rest of the playoffs. Blake Griffin's out for the rest of the playoffs. Doomed. What if the Clippers had been healthy? We'll never know. And it hurts. It hurts to even talk about it. But you just think, like, well, there's going to be another chance like that. It might not be this year, and it might not be next year. But if you keep this core together for five more years, you're going to get another shot. And I know it's enticing to say, blow it up, get draft picks. But draft picks are just as likely to be, you know, I mean, you rarely get a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant. Frankly, you're lucky if you get a Blake Griffin with a number one overall pick. And a lot of times you might end up with, you know, Hasheem Thabeet or Greg Oden or Michael Olowokandi. So I'm not really sure that that's something you really want to be jumping into. I think if you look at it for the next 5 years and you say, we might have one or two chances in the next 5 years, you're not getting one or two chances in the next 5 years if you start a rebuild. Especially because the Clippers don't have a lot of draft picks going forward. So why not stay good? That's just my take on the whole thing. Now transitioning into the second half of the episode, today is the NBA trade deadline day, and I know that's where all the excitement is. I did want to make sure that I talked a little bit about the Clippers-Warriors matchup tonight and Chris Paul's health before getting into trade deadline stuff, because I could have easily gotten bogged down on this and talked for 45 minutes and never mentioned the game. So there's been a few trades so far. There's been like maybe seven trades that you would sort of classify as trade deadline. Going back, I think, to that Miles Plumlee Hornets Bucks swap, although I think you know, that was a little while ago and he played a few games before the deadline, so maybe that one doesn't count. But definitely Mason Plumlee, the Nuggets Blazers trade, counts as sort of getting close to the deadline. And I think if you go back to the Kyle Korver trade in January, it definitely doesn't count. But so you've got Hornets give Miles Plumlee to the Bucks for Spencer Hawes, or Hornets get Miles Plumlee from the Bucks for Spencer Hawes and Roy Hibbert. The Bucks dump salary. You know, Plumlee's making $12.5 million each of the next three seasons. It's an awful contract. The Hornets take on salary for a bad player. I think it's a bad trade for the Hornets. I think it's an okay trade for the Bucks. The Nuggets get Mason Plumlee and a second-round pick. The Blazers get Joseph Nurkic and a first-round pick. I don't think it's a great deal for either team. Denver didn't really need the pick that they traded, that first-rounder, but they moved it for a center who's going to struggle to play alongside Nikola Jokic and who they're going to need to overpay this summer to keep. So they may have given up a first-round pick for nothing. And Portland is desperate to revamp that front court because Lillard and McCollum are so good, but they haven't had the answers at the 3, 4, or 5. I get it. You want to give up on Plumlee. You don't think he's your guy. But I don't think like the 22nd pick is going to solve their problems either. And now they're not going to have cap room to get a replacement center. And none of this is going to undo the real problem, which is that they signed Evan Turner and Alan Crabb to $800 bazillion last year. Raptors get Serge Ibaka from the Orlando Magic for Terrence Ross in a 2017 first. I like this trade for both teams. Ross is a good bench wing, you know, like fringe starter, can play the two and the three, shoots the ball well, athletic, on a decent long-term deal at around $10 million each for the next two after this season. And Orlando gets a late 2017 first-round pick, which is just like another asset for the war chest. And the Raptors, for it's a no-brainer, get Serge Ibaka and plug that hole at power forward. He does more for them than Ross was ever going to do, and they're trying to take advantage of a year when Cleveland might be less than healthy. I get that. The only problem for the Magic is that how they got here. This is like a fine cut-your-losses move. The problem is that they're in a situation where they had to cut their losses. Rob Hennigan, who was like a highly, very highly thought of general manager in the NBA not too long ago, has now been kind of really, really unsuccessful in recent years. And while Terrence Ross and this new pick they got are pretty good, pretty good assets moving forward. They're nice pieces to have on your team. I don't know that Rob Hennigan's going to be the guy to do that next rebuild for them after how this has gone. Here's the big one. DeMarcus Cousins and Omri Caspi to the Pelicans. Buddy Hield, Tyreek Evans, Langston Galloway, 2017 first, 2017 second to the Kings. It's the biggest trade that's happened so far, and it might be the biggest trade for the entire deadline because DeMarcus Cousins is such a huge star. But really, there's not much more to say than that the Knicks took an awful package for Cousins. It should have been like a young star and two good first round picks. The young star that they got is Buddy Hield, who's an okay young player, and he's a good kid. There's nothing wrong with him, but he's not a young star. He's a prospect, and he's going to take a while to blossom, and he's not going to be the next Steph Curry like they want him to be. And they only got one first round pick. And because they gave DeMarcus Cousins to the Pelicans, the Pelicans are probably going to make the playoffs this year, so that pick they got is going to be like 15 or 16. So they basically, and then they don't think Tyreek Evans or Langston Galloway are in their long-term plan. So they traded DeMarcus Cousins for Buddy Hield, pick 15 or 16, and a second-round pick. It's an awful value. The Pelicans just got a lot more interesting, but like I said, because of where they are in the standings, there's no way they're touching the 7th seed. They might get up to 8, and then they're going to get trounced by the Warriors in the first round. I do think, though, long-term, this gives them an opportunity to try to build something around those two great big men they have. It gives them direction, and I don't think they've had direction for a while. I think their direction has been like, well, let's make some fringe pieces and hope that Anthony Davis is the greatest player of all time. Well, Anthony Davis is pretty damn good, but he's not the greatest player of all time, and now they look like they're doing more building a team than hoping he carries them. I think I talked about the Lou Williams-Corey Brewer trade on yesterday's pod, but basically the Rockets get an upgrade player on the bench. They get another scorer, another shooter to kind of up the high variance offense that they want to have a chance at upsetting the Warriors. The Lakers, on the receiving end, get Corey Brewer, who has like $7.5 million on his contract for next year. So they have a big expiring chip to use at next year's deadline and a late first round pick. It's a fine trade for both teams. The Wizards get Bojan Bogdanovic and Chris McCullough from the Nets for Andrew Nicholson, Marcus Thornton, and a first-round pick. Basically, even though Bogdanovic is having a nice year, his value is kind of muted by the fact that he's on the last half season of his rookie contract. And so whoever has him is going to have to pay to keep him this summer. The Nets didn't want to do that, which is why it makes sense to trade him. And the Wizards didn't really want to do that, but it's worth it, they think, to get that bench scoring for the coming stretch. And from the Nets' perspective, Andrew Nicholson's salary, which is a bad contract, is almost immaterial to them because they're rebuilding. It's not like they're luring anyone with their cap space right now. So eat the cap hit while it doesn't hurt you. Get another pick to try to build through the draft, especially because the Nets are so low on draft assets. The Sixers got Tiago Splitter and 2 second-round picks from the Hawks for Ersan Ilyasova. This, again, I think is a pretty straightforward and good deal for both teams. The Hawks get a good player. Ilyasova's having a career year. He's shooting the ball well. He's on an expiring deal, so there's no like long-term damage to their cap sheet if Paul Millsap leaves. The Sixers move that guy, so they get worse, which is kind of what they want at this point in the season. They get Tiago Splitter, who's an expiring deal, who will probably not really be a factor for them, even if he does play. And they get 2 kind of free second-round picks. So they're able to cash out Ilyasova, who is going to leave in the summer for nothing, get a couple picks. It's a fine deal. That's where we are right now. That's a rundown of all the trades that have happened so far. But I think overall, it's really hard to everyone's asking me, are the Clippers going to make a move tomorrow? I don't know, man. And presumably you're listening to this Thursday morning, while the trade deadline stuff is going on. Now, last year the Clippers were deeply engaged in talks for Channing Frye. They were talking and talking and talking. They decided they didn't want to move a future first for Channing Frye. They walked away from the deal. The Cavaliers got him. The Clippers were standing pat. It was everywhere. All the reporters, yeah, Clippers are standing pat. They were interested in Frye. They didn't get the deal they wanted. They're done. They're out. Wednesday goes past, nothing. Clippers are out. They're standing pat. Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, Clippers are standing pat. 2:45, trade deadline's at 3 o'clock. 2:45, nothing. 2:50, nothing. 2:55, 2:59, nothing. 3 o'clock comes, trade deadline, no deal, Clippers are standing pat. At 3:16, 16 minutes after the trade deadline, a report comes through that the Clippers are on hold with the NBA league office to get a deal done. Lance Stephenson and a first-round pick for Jeff Green. That's how long they, you know, they waited until the very last second to try to gain leverage. And that's with Doc Rivers, the GM. So it's not crazy that he would be trying to do the same thing right now, wait until the last second to get leverage. And then, you know, whether you want to call it panicking or not, pick up the phone at 2:59 to the league office and get in the last deal of the season. Because that's what they did last year. So you never know. And you never know how much is posturing. You know, Matt, I talk about Matt Moore at HP Basketball just because he tweets so much. So it seems like I'm always seeing his tweets. But I do enjoy what he has to say most of the time. And he said, every team, every year, the night before the deadline, is standing pat. Everyone who's made a deal is happy with the deal they've made and not looking to do anything else. Everyone who hasn't made a deal is happy with their roster and standing pat. Everyone who was trying to sell off one of their players thinks the market wasn't offering them enough and wants to keep him now. And everyone who was trying to package pieces to go out and buy a player thinks that the prices are too high across the league and they'd rather stick with their guys. Everyone, every year. And then there's always trades on Thursday. It's all leveraging, it's all posturing. And so we don't know what any of it means. You know, it sounded like up until Tuesday, the Clippers were still engaged in Carmelo Anthony talks. And then today, it really started to sound like they're dead, they pulled out, they're no longer interested. Who knows what that... Are they really no longer... Could they really no longer be interested in Carmelo Anthony? Or did they pull out so that the Knicks will call them in the morning and say, hey, are you still, like, thinking about this? And the Clippers go, well, you know, once we heard that you wanted the future first unprotected, we got cold feet. And they just go, well, we could talk about negotiating protection. And then you go from there. You know, the Clippers don't talk to the Suns about P.J. Tucker because the asking price is too high. And then finally the Clippers call and they're like, hey, we still want Tucker, but we're not giving a first. But here's what we can do for you. We can give you Diamond Stone and a second, or we can give you 2 seconds, or we can give you a first-round pick, but like top 25 protected. I don't know, whatever it is. Teams, you know, and maybe the Clippers do stand pat. There are teams every year that don't make moves at the deadline. It wouldn't be the first time that the Clippers haven't made a move at the deadline, and it certainly won't be the last, and they certainly wouldn't be the only team to do it. But someone who it seems like tonight as I record this at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time, someone who it seems like is standing pat and done is going to make a relatively big splash by 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Something's going to change in the next 14 hours for someone. And it's not going to be, you know, Byron Mullins and cash for into some team's cap space so that you can clear room or, you know, avoid the hard cap. It's not going to be something like that. And it might not be the Clippers. The Clippers might not do anything at all. But some team that is supposedly standing pat right now is going to make a move. So it might be the Clippers. And again, everyone's, you know, all asking me on Twitter, are the Clippers going to make a move? What's going to happen tomorrow? I don't know. If I knew what was going to happen, maybe this podcast would... Maybe this podcast would be a lot more famous, although I am, you know, humble brag, I'm happy with the traffic. Thank you guys all for listening. But maybe this podcast would be a lot more famous if I knew exactly what was going to happen on trade deadline day. I don't. And no one does. And even Doc Rivers, sitting in his ivory tower right now with his phone made of gold, does not know who's going to be calling him, although he might somewhat have a plan for what calls he's going to place once the morning comes. Again, I'd like to remind you guys, if the Clippers make a trade, I'm going to try to hop on Facebook Live to talk about it. The Clips Nation Facebook page, just type Clips Nation into your Facebook search bar. You'll find it. You can get a notification if there's a live video, or you can just go check the page if the Clippers make a trade. I'll try to be on there talking about whoever the Clippers trade for and whatever they trade away and how the value was and how the team's going to look going forward. I do have class tomorrow afternoon. You know, it's funny. There's at St. John's, where I go to school, there's a class period that starts at 3:25 in the afternoon and runs to 4:50. And for some reason, just the way my schedule has ended up, last spring I had this class. This spring I have this class again that runs from 3:25 to 4:50 on Thursdays. And the trade deadline is Thursday at 3 o'clock. So last year I was like, okay, this is perfect. I've got a little bit of a window after the trade deadline to finish up any work I have to do. Then I can go to class. I won't have to be in class looking at rumors on Twitter. Well, of course, 3 o'clock comes, 3 o'clock goes, 3:05, no deal. Okay, start packing up. 3:15, Clippers, the Clippers deal goes public. And it totally, just totally, like, threw off my, you know, I had to, like, do some work and then go late to class and then be working all through class. And that class was metaphysics, too, so that was kind of a rough one to not pay attention for a day in. But, yeah, I happen to have a class in the same time slot this semester, so hopefully if the Clippers make a move, they do it a couple hours before the trade deadline instead of waiting until the very last minute again. But we'll see. All I'm going to say is that be ready for pretty much anything. I won't be shocked if the Clippers don't do anything tomorrow. I won't be shocked. It wouldn't surprise me. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they make a trade for one of the targets they've been talking about. You know, Chandler, Gallinari, Tucker. I would not be surprised if the Clippers have Carmelo Anthony by the trade deadline tomorrow. It really would not shock me. I think it's certainly still a possibility, although I definitely am not counting on it in any way. And it wouldn't surprise me, you know, nothing would surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if Matt Barnes is playing in the game tomorrow night. It wouldn't surprise me if he's playing for the Warriors in the game tomorrow night. You just never know. So that's what my message would be to you guys is, don't go into this trade deadline thinking, man, I'm going to be so disappointed if the Clippers don't make a move. Because there's a really good chance that you're going to get let down. More likely than not, they do nothing. But definitely don't go, oh, it sounds like they're standing pat, nothing's going to happen, and then be completely shocked when your favorite player, Jamal Crawford, gets traded away. Because that's certainly still within the realm of possibility, too. Well within the realm of possibility. Here's what will shock me tomorrow. If the Clippers trade Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, or DeAndre Jordan, I will be shocked. My jaw will be on the floor. I'll have a hard time focusing on anything except for the Clippers for the rest of the week. Even if they trade J.J. Redick, it won't shock me, just because he's expiring and he's going to get a big contract next summer, and you have to question with like his size and durability, is he a long-term, two-way starting caliber shooting guard worth paying $18 million to? So moving J.J. Redick wouldn't shock me because that contract situation is kind of icky, but those three, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, I would be like totally flummoxed if one of those guys gets traded. Anything else and anyone else that they land up to like Carmelo Anthony level, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, if they go above that, if they somehow walk away with Paul George or Jimmy Butler by the end of the trade deadline, that's like not even feasible to me that would happen. But anything up to Paul George, I think is realistic. Trading anyone on the team up through like J.J. Redick level importance, I think is realistic. I just don't think the big three are getting touched. That's pretty much all I can promise when you ask me what's going to happen is that, you know, we'll know by 3 o'clock, or maybe to put it better, we'll know by like 3:15 or 3:30 when all of the trade calls have finally been put through. But it'll be an exciting day and it'll be a letdown. It'll be both. It always is. It's always a fun day of looking at rumors, thinking about this, thinking about that. It's always a letdown when the end of the day comes and you see like, oh, there actually wasn't a ton of trades done today. I think people kind of tend to expect it to be like free agency, where of course a lot is going to happen during free agency because of the 450 roster spots in the NBA, like 200 of them are going to be dealt with in like a week or 2 weeks, you know, something like that, 3 weeks maybe. But there's going to be a ton of chaos in the first few days of free agency. The trade deadline, there doesn't have to be chaos. There doesn't have to be transactions. Free agency, there has to be. Players have to sign with teams. Teams don't have to trade with each other. So just stay tuned, I guess, is the best I can say. And as stuff comes, as we get rumors, as we get leaks, as deals get done, I'll be analyzing them because it's what I do with my free time because I'm a nerd. So you can follow me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han if you don't already. You can follow the Clips Nation account at Clips Nation SBN, where we'll be covering any Clippers rumor that happens to come out tomorrow, as well as on ClipsNation.com. We'll be right there, snap of the fingers, on top of everything. And again, Clips Nation on Facebook for any sort of, you know, if you want to watch the live video, if the Clippers do make a deal. And then you can always email me, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com, if you got any longer questions or whatever. You know, hopefully I'll have time to get back to everyone in depth tomorrow as trade stuff is going on. And obviously listen to this podcast, the Locked On Clippers podcast, tomorrow on Friday as we talk about everything that happened on trade deadline day and we get ready for tomorrow night's game versus the Spurs. And if the Clippers put up a fight tonight against the Warriors, we'll talk about that game. But if they get blown out, we won't talk about it so much. So that'll be fine. And we got enough to talk about tomorrow that if this game tonight against the Warriors is so ugly that we don't want to talk about it, we can just ignore it. So that, you know, that's a fun thing about playing the Warriors on trade deadline day. With that, we are well over the 30-minute time slot for the episode. So I'm going to call it a show. Bold prediction. I think Melo to the Clippers is more likely than a lot of people think it is right now. I think there's been a lot of posturing, but I think the motivation for both sides to get a deal done is still there. I think Carmelo will waive his no-trade clause if the Knicks bring a deal to the table. And I think that with the way the market has shaped up in the last couple weeks, Jamal Crawford's deal is movable. And if Jamal Crawford is movable, you get back to the point where a few weeks ago the story was, yeah, you know, the teams are pretty much close on a deal, just the Clippers need to ship out Jamal Crawford for salaries to work, and the Knicks don't want to take Jamal Crawford's salary back. Well, it seems to me that Jamal is movable right now in today's NBA landscape on the 23rd, Thursday the 23rd, trade deadline day. Seems to me like Jamal Crawford's contract is movable. And if it is, it seems to me like they can have the deal that they were looking for a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like it's totally within play. Again, I won't be angry or let down if it doesn't happen, but something that I'm just kind of watching and looking at and thinking, that, you know, it seems like it's really still possible. That's it. That's our show for the day. I'll be on Twitter spitballing all day. I could talk about this stuff for hours because, like I said, I'm a huge nerd. But we'll have tomorrow's episode to talk about anything that actually does happen instead of talking about what may happen. As always, guys, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. If you like the show, please go on iTunes and leave a good review. And with that, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.